Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Works Radio. On the line, I have Michelle in Denver. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's everybody else?
We're doing well. I know you're at work, so if we have some dogs barking, that's okay. We also have on the line Sid Corpy, and we're going to introduce her in just a second. We're doing our Pitzer Prize round three today. So before we get to that, Michelle, what's going on at Denver Dog Works?
Well, other than the fact that I am at work, and I'm usually not when we do the radio show, so I do apologize for the barking dogs, but maybe it's a little bit of proof that I do have a job and I do work my tail off. At Denver Dog Works right now, we are in the height of spring training, so to speak. We have a lot of dogs joining our Camp Works program, which is a lot of fun. When you and your family go out of town for spring break, it's a good idea to drop your dog off with someone like us so that we can get them some activities going and get them trained while you're gone.
You know, I just came back from a very quick trip to Denver this past weekend, and I have to say that it's still running very well. Michelle, you're doing a great job.
What? Was that a compliment?
That is a compliment.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So we have on the line a good friend of ours. Her name is Sid Corpy. She wrote a book called Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. She's been on the Dog Works radio show at least four or five times now. She is also an animal chaplain up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities area. And without further ado, Sid Corpy, how are you?
Hello there. I'm well, guys. It's good to talk to you, as always. I kind of feel like the Joan Rivers who subs for Johnny Carson the most on the Tonight Show.
Well, you know, if we ever go to Hawaii or anything, can you run a show or two for us?
I'd rather go with you to Hawaii, to be honest.
There you go. So Sid, I know that today we're doing the round three of the Pitzer Prize, and of course we always have new listeners coming in and out. So can you tell us about what that is?
The Pitzer Prize kind of came to me after I had written my book and it had won a few literary awards. I just thought, you know, I know how much these awards have meant to me and bolstered my confidence. I'd like to, you know, support other pet-related writers. And the play on Pulitzer Prize just popped into my head. So I called it that and I pursued it. And you guys jumped on the bandwagon. I'm so grateful of that. And since then, we've been, you know, having rounds where we ask for different kinds of literary input, and it's fun and fascinating to see all the people submitting things and making our job as judges quite difficult. And that's what we want. We want to suffer here. And it's just been really, really enjoyable, and I'm happy to say we got great entries for this current round, and we have a couple of people who tied for first place, actually, that will be sharing their persuasive essays. That was this round.
So in previous rounds, we've done poetry and we've done short stories. Is that right?
Right, right.
And in one of the rounds, I believe it was this past round, round two, one of the authors, accomplished author, was a submitter to the contest, and she's mm-hmm. going to be on our show next week. Her
yes,
name
Jenny
is
Pavlovic. Yes,
yes, and she wrote a book called Hurricane Kate, and she also has a remarkable book. It's kind of like one of those books that you get for in case of emergency type books where you can fill out all the information for your dog. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. have those for their kids and for their family where they have all these, you know, emergency numbers and things. But she wrote a book for your pets. And I think that's a marvelous idea to carry. And her book about Hurricane Kate is a dog that was rescued from Katrina. And I know you were part of that. Were you the editor on those books?
Actually, on her second one, which is the Not Without My Dog Record and Resource Book, and it is amazingly pertinent, especially in light of things like the tsunamis in Japan.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just think of all the people who are being separated from their pets and, you know, maybe have no way to get them back into their lives if they don't have identification and photos and descriptions of the behaviors and all these things that can help people put that animal they've found together with their owner. It's a really important thing, and I'm very proud to say I had a small part in helping her get that out there because it's great.
Well, she will be on DogWorks Radio next Sunday, I believe, and you can find out more about that at blogtalkradio.com/dogworks, or search for us on Facebook or Twitter if you follow us there. Anywhere you search on Google, we will pop up. So this round, round three, is persuasive essays, and you and I kind of brainstormed about this topic a few months ago, and we thought that more of a letter to the editor type format, and we had some very interesting type stories to choose from. And before we get into those, Michelle, anything you want to add to this before we go on?
Well, you know, I think that this is a very interesting little contest that we have going on. I don't think that, because I am the mother of three teenagers, I don't think the schools are encouraging this type of creative writing out of their students any longer. So it's nice to see some younger people doing the writing as we did in round one. I would like to see us open up maybe a junior Pulitzer Prize contest to encourage more of the kids to get out there and write. I know our daughter does a lot of journal writing, but, you know, they just don't know how to grasp a topic anymore that they aren't forced to be writing for school. So I think it's a good thing that we're doing this.
You know,
that
sounds like
an upcoming round.
I do think just in one of the previous rounds, a young lady did third place, I believe, in one of the stories. Do you recall that, Sid?
Yeah, she got honorable mention for her dog Puggy story. It was Kenna Arndt from Appleton, Wisconsin. She was just a mere 9 years old and showed a very impressive command of the English language and writing skills. So there is hope.
And, you know, in today's world where everybody has a blog and Facebook and Twitter and all these things, this is a perfect marriage of having a contest like this. Do you know, Sid, that there's only 0.6% of Internet users that write a blog? And, of course, it's much less of those users that do it on a consistent basis. So very few people have taken part in blog writing, even though when you turn on a computer, there's blogs all over the place, but very few Internet users do something like that. And that's a great idea, as Michelle mentioned, to get the kids out there and involved. And I know that we were very adamant about getting our kids involved with their own website and their own, you know, domain names and things, because that is going to be the way that people search in the future. When, you know, when our kids are going into college and things, one of the first things that people do is do a Google search. And obviously you want to make sure that your kids are well represented, not just having photos of them doing obscure things, if I may be so bold, on Facebook and things. So it's a great way to hone your skills and really become a very fluent writer, because it's something you have to use your entire life. It may not be poetry or creative essays, but you're going to have to write letters and cover letters and thank you notes and all those things that go on throughout your life. And what a better way to start than being part of this Pulitzer Prize that you put on, Sid. And I think it's a great way to really capture the essence of writing.
Well, that's wonderful. And I'm a former high school English teacher myself, and I couldn't agree with you more that writing is a muscle, you know, the ability
right.
to write is a muscle. If you don't practice it regularly, you can get kind of rusty, and you don't want to have that happen. I'm amazed by the percentage of bloggers being so low. You know, when you're doing it yourself, it feels like everywhere you turn, someone is doing it, but I guess, you know, if you look at the gazillions of people using the Internet, yeah, it would be a small percentage. That's eye-opening.
Right, right. So let's jump right into this, Sid. Let's talk about round three. Explain to us, before we get started, how do people submit? Is it too late for the next round? I know we're going to talk about round four in just a couple of minutes, but how does the process work before we get started into the stories?
Okay. Well, when you want to submit to whatever the current round is, and those will continually rotate, you can go to my website, www.goodgriefpetloss.com, and go to the blog page, and there will be a link to the Petlitzer Prize. And go to the highest number round that's listed. In this case, it'll be round four. And it'll tell you the rules and regulations and so forth. The current one that's coming up, they have until the end of May to submit, but get them in early. It's better than procrastinating. And to, when you've looked it over and you see the rules and you know that you've qualified and you've written the right length story, then go ahead and email it to me with Petlitzer Prize in the subject line, and my email is goodgriefpetloss@gmail.com. And, we'll be talking later about what the upcoming round is, and it should be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
So in round three, we did the persuasive essays. And like I said just a couple of minutes ago, it was supposed to be geared towards a letter to the editor type format. And we got a few entries. It wasn't by any means as strong as previous. Maybe it was the subject matter. I don't know. But we did get a couple of great ones. And Sid, let's get going on these. Which one do you want to read first?
I will read Ingrid King's essay, just because it's going to be the harder for me to read.
Okay.
Because it has words with many syllables sometimes. No.
All righty.
Speaking to my inadequacies, not hers. Ingrid King is herself an award-winning author of Buckley's Story, Lessons from a Feline Master Teacher, and she's a former veterinary hospital manager turned writer. And she has a blog called The Conscious Cat. And she is from Herndon, Virginia. And we thank you, Ingrid, for this very thought-provoking, persuasive essay entitled The Truth About Dry Cat Food. Grocery and pet store shelves abound with a dizzying array of cat food. For decades, dry kibble has been the preferred choice for most cat owners. After all, the bag says it's complete and balanced, it's easy to feed, and most cats seem to like it. Unfortunately, dry pet foods, even the high-priced premium and veterinary brands, are the equivalent of junk food for pets. Feeding dry food to cats is no different than feeding sugared cereals to kids. Cats are obligate carnivores. This means they need meat to survive. They cannot get enough nutritional support from plant-based proteins such as grains and vegetables because, unlike humans and dogs, they lack the specific enzyme that processes plant-based proteins metabolically. They need little or no carbohydrates in their diet. Feeding foods high in carbohydrates leads to any number of degenerative diseases, including diabetes, kidney disease, and inflammatory bowel disease. Many pet owners feed dry food because it can be left out during the day without spoiling while the cat is left at home alone. This method of free choice feeding is one of the leading contributors to obesity in cats. Cats, by nature, are hunters, and it does not make sense that they should need access to food 24 hours a day. Meal feeding twice a day mimics their natural hunting behavior much closer, and by feeding controlled portion sizes twice a day rather than leaving food out all day long, calorie intake and weight can be controlled without the cat going hungry. Dry food is the leading cause behind most urinary tract problems in cats. While cats who eat only dry food will generally drink more water, they still don't get enough moisture to support all their bodily functions and are essentially living in a constant state of low-level dehydration, which can lead to bladder and kidney problems. Due to the high carbohydrate content, dry food dumps unnaturally high levels of sugar into the cat's bloodstream, which can lead to an imbalance of its natural metabolic process. In extreme cases, this can, and often does, lead to diabetes. Dry food does not clean pets' teeth. Contrary to popular belief, most cats don't chew their kibble long enough for any of the scraping action that is the theory behind this myth to kick in. What little they do chew shatters into small pieces. Some pet food manufacturers offer a dental diet that is made up of larger than normal size kibble to encourage chewing. But in my years at veterinary practices, I've seen many cats swallow even those larger size pieces whole. Additionally, dry food leaves a carbohydrate residue in the cat's mouth that actually encourages growth of tartar and plaque. You may find that some cats are very difficult to switch from their dry food, further supporting the junk food analogy. They're literally addicted to the carbs and additives used in these diets, not much different from a sugar or carb addiction in humans. During the manufacturing process, substances called digests, fermented byproducts of meat processing with no nutritional value, are sprayed on the outside of the kibble to make it more palatable to the cat. Most cats wouldn't touch dry food if it wasn't for these flavor enhancers. For these hardcore addicts, you will need to transition them to a healthier diet somewhat slowly. Never let a cat go without food for more than 24 hours. The one best thing you can do for your cat's health is eliminate all dry food from his diet and feed a meat-based, grain-free, canned or raw diet, which is consistent with the needs of a carnivore.
And that was by whom, Sid?
Ingrid King, a very smartly stated and provocative topic. We wanted the persuasive essays to argue things without a lot of, you know, hyperbole and so forth and super heavy emotions and name-calling and things like that. And this one really appealed intellectually to me. And it made it something that, you know, if you agreed or you didn't agree, you could still go online and look up more things, but it was thought-provoking in that manner. And I really appreciated her efforts on this.
I agree. Michelle, what do you think about Ingrid's essay?
Well, with Ingrid's essay, I found it probably one of the most informative and persuasive writings I've read on raw diets. And, you know, we get a lot of people that ask us questions about raw diets for dogs. And I have a lot of clients that feed raw diets. But you'd be amazed at how incorrectly people are utilizing the new raw diet method. And I say new loosely because obviously it's not new to the pets. I have a client who has a boxer, for instance, and she feeds raw and proudly announced that she fed raw. Because during her evaluation, I noted that her dog was underweight, visibly underweight. And when I noticed that, you know, I always say, so what are you feeding your dog? She said, oh, we feed raw. And I said, well, what method are you using with your raw diet? And she said, oh, we give her, oh, two or three, maybe four chicken wings, and then we give her Nature's Kitchen. Well, Nature's Kitchen is nothing more than a glorified canned food variety that is labeled differently and placed in a tubular piece of plastic instead of a can. It does not have enough nutritional value, nor do four chicken wings for a boxer. So I always want to encourage people, whether you have a dog or a cat, if you are choosing to feed raw, please make sure that you are working with a vet who has some expertise in pet nutrition, not just a vet who is pushing, you know, whatever variety is behind their counters, because that's who comes in and wants them to push their food. It's not always a good idea to feed kibble, but it's not always a good idea to feed raw either. You need to make sure that you're following certain guidelines with your veterinarian to ensure that your dog is getting quality nutrition, not just what the new fad is. And right now I'm concerned about raw being a fad, so I encourage people to get out there and learn as much as they can. Ingrid did a wonderful job. Much applause to her.
You know, I agree with you, Michelle. We've had several guests on our show talking about raw diets and different ways to feed dogs. And of course, you and I don't know a whole lot about cats. And I do think that Ingrid really hit the point on several things. And if I could just mention a couple of them, I really liked the part where she talked about the dental myth about chewing the food. You know, I watch my dogs eat all the time, and especially watch sled dogs eat. I have never seen a dog that just sits down and chews his food like a human would.
They're hoovers.
Yes, You know, it's always funny to watch a dog chew a piece of gum or something, you know, as a parlor trick, or, you know, chew on a jelly bean. I know our dog Kane loves to chew on jelly beans, and he'll literally sit there for a few seconds and you know, just chomp away at it. But so few pets do not chew their food. It's pretty much in and out. That's the way that their digestive tract begins in the mouth. And I think that's a great point. And that really was the persuasive part to me. Yes, Michelle?
You know, what people seem to fail to realize is that our teeth are designed for the chewing action. Dog's teeth weren't, and neither were cats. They're not designed for chewing. They're designed for ripping, pulling, and tearing.
Right.
So remember, they're getting in there with connective tissues, and that's what is raw. You cannot get in there and, you know, we're going to gnaw on a chicken bone or a rib bone, as disgusting as that is for some people's eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
A dog is not. They're going to break it in half and swallow it. If it's raw, they will pull and tear it off. I mean, Robert, you've seen Kane do that with chicken bones. They don't get in there and go, ooh, yummy, and I'm just going to salivate all over this and take my time with it and have myself a little tablecloth meal. That's not what they do.
Right, right. So I think that this one hit it right on the mark in terms of what we were trying to do with the persuasive letter to the editor type response. What is the next one, Sid?
The next one is actually an untitled piece by Sarah Henderson. She is a founding board member of the Pet Project Midwest, whose mission is to keep pets in the home they love and out of our overburdened shelters. And she's from Des Moines, Iowa. And we chose this one, I believe, because it's kind of deceptively persuasive. It appeals very much to our senses and our emotions, but not in a, you know, over-the-top kind of way. And then it moves into its final, you know, point that it makes and drives home right at the last moment. And I think it really spoke to the bond between humans and their animals, and in this case, dogs she's focusing on. So here is Sarah Henderson's persuasive essay. It's not the same as our love for and from a partner, a parent or friend or child. It is a love all its own. This love is a steel cord between two hearts, a cord that ties us to each other, us and our dog. They live for us. When we're lazy, they wake us. When we need exercise, they remind us of their leash. When the bills come, they bark at the mailman and shred the evidence. It's not their fault an invoice and a birthday card smell the same. When we go to work, they give us sad eyes, so all day long we'll know we'll be missed. When we come home, they act like we're Obama, Lady Gaga, and Prince William rolled into one. When we sit in our favorite chair, they're right beside us, making sure we can easily scratch their head or belly without too much effort. When we sleep, they drape themselves across us to be sure we're warm through the night, even if it's in the middle of summer. When we prepare their favorite meal of kibble or canned, they worship us as the best hunter and chef on the Food Network. When we have a bad day, they rub their furry selves against us and lick away our tears. When we snap or growl because they want to worship us at an inconvenient time, they don't pout or sulk. They wait until a better time and try again. Their love knows no bounds of age or income or bra size or sports ability. We are their person, and they are our dog. And that is how it is, and how it should be, and how it will be until the day it isn't. That day will be hellishly painful, and that pain will last long into the future until it softens to a gentle ache that brings laughter and tears all at once when memories come unbidden at awkward times and sleepy times and happy times and other times. But there's a problem. Too many adored pets are being released to the care of others because their beloved people find themselves struggling. The economy is tough and jobs are scarce and gas prices and food prices and all other prices are climbing while incomes are falling. Pet pantries are rising up to avoid this crisis of separation. think about that unconditional love. Think about what you would do to keep your own best friend at home with you. Then find a pet pantry near you and donate your time or your money or both. And try not to judge. Remember that steel cord.
And that was by whom, Sid?
Sarah Henderson of Des Moines, Iowa, and the Pet Project of the Midwest.
You know, this one I loved. It really hit the spot. It reminded me of a very quick, short movie. You know, you get all the emotion, and you get so wrapped up into it, and all of a sudden, bam, it hits you, that
mm-hmm.
climax part of it. And I was sitting in the car when Michelle was reading this just this past weekend. We were sitting in a parking lot, and Michelle was reading over the submissions. And I read that, or she read that one, and I said, that's my number one pick. You don't have to go any further. I thought that one, to me, was just the one, for whatever reason, that really just caught my attention and really persuaded me on the topic. And even though I didn't even know what a pet pantry was, I remember asking Michelle, what exactly is a pet pantry? Is it like a food pantry where you know, people that are struggling go to pick up their food baskets or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and she explained to me exactly what it was. But I tell you what, to me, this one hit the mark. Michelle, what do you think about this one?
You know, I think it's funny because I think I may have had a little hand in my persuasive reading skills. My lot of it wasn't exactly fair because this one was so animated and, you know, sing-songy and very easy to read. It puts you in that warm, cozy, you know, blanket by the fire type of feeling. And I really enjoyed reading it. And I wasn't even really listening to what the message was. It was an enjoyable read,
mm-hmm.
especially for a read out loud. And I think that's why I enjoyed it. And, you know, Robert says that my voice is just so ultra sexy. I think that I just feed him right into that.
This is a family show, Michelle. We have this
yeah,
listed as a family
ask,
program.
What are we rated today?
clean. But I think that's why we both enjoyed that one, because it was everything that everyone does embrace about their pets. And what a way to put it out there. What a good message. And, you know, I know that it's probably their mission statement, but like I told Robert, there's a great need for a pet pantry. There really is, and I'd like to see more of them sprout up across the country, because
yeah.
that is a serious reason why people aren't holding on to their pets anymore. I mean, Robert wrote an article a couple of years ago about pets and foreclosure, and this just sends that straight home. I mean, we have a lot of pets that come through us that were relinquished and then rescued by new owners, and they say, we're not really sure what happened. They found them in the shed, tied up in the backyard with a bag of food. I said, those dogs were abandoned due to foreclosure. Those people got out as fast as they could. And they're like, oh, my God, I didn't even think of that. Why would they do that? And I'm like, well, there aren't – homeless shelters don't necessarily allow dogs. Friends and family don't always necessarily allow your pets. So what do? You don't have time when you're scurrying off in the middle of the night to drop your dog off at the Dumb Friends League. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't doing the right thing. They're not seeking out the help. But, you know, a food pantry for people has been around for a long time, you know,
mm-hmm.
I believe prior to the Depression. And I think it's a good idea for all pets, not just dogs. I'm hoping that Sarah's pet pantry does include all pets, including, you know, horses, because I know a lot of people here in Colorado, we had a fire a few years ago up in the Bailey area, and they were very concerned because of the amount of horses that people have, and we're not talking one or two little ponies for your, you know, overly spoiled daughter. We're talking
mm-hmm.
about four or five horses. You know, and they're using them as pack animals to go in and go hunting and things. And what do you do? You know, when you can't afford to feed your animal anymore, that's part of your livelihood.
Right.
Hopefully, there's a food pantry. I know there's not, or I shouldn't say I know. I have not been able to locate one here in Colorado yet. And Robert, I know that they have a very unique program up in Alaska for the homeless shelters, you know, if a moose or another large animal is confiscated by the state troopers up there, which are also their, you know, basically their animal control officers and their rangers and things, they relinquish them to the local homeless shelter for them to cook. Also, if you hit a moose on the highway, they also take that moose. They put him down humanely, and then they take that meat to the homeless shelter. I know in Colorado we should have a program like that, but we do not. So I think that that is a phenomenal program, because whatever they can't use at the homeless shelters, I believe that they do send out to local dog yards and mushers and things, and they make that meat available to them for small donations and things.
Wonderful.
And
it is being wasted.
Right. And up here in Alaska, it's a ticket. It's a crime if you hit a moose and just keep on driving by. You have to report it to the authorities. And the state troopers are kind of the police force of Alaska, since we have such a spread out type road system. They're the ones that kind of police the roads as they do in most other states. But they do a little bit more of person-to-person policing up here rather than in the states, where they have police forces and sheriff's offices and things like that. So, Sid, what do you think about this story? I know that you're the editor, you're the writer in charge here. Let's get your take on it.
Well, as I was saying, I appreciated, as Michelle was saying too, the lyrical way it read. And I'm going along, and at first I was thinking, is this going to fit the topic of persuasive piece, you know? And I'm going through, I'm just going, well, this is lovely, but it, well, and then when it came to the end and it was pow, you could be losing all this, and people right and left are losing this incredible connection because of finances, and we've got to do something about it. That's what tipped it for me, and I said, I have to tie these two for first place, because, you know, they're so vastly different, but they both serve important purposes, and they have achieved it very effectively and in different ways. And if I may, I want to plug a really important project here in Minneapolis. It was started by a woman named Kim Carrier, who would be a great guest for your show, by the way. She started the Pet Project of Minnesota, and it, too, is a group, a nonprofit that goes around town collecting donated pet food and cat litter and birdseed, you know, whatever, and takes it to human food shelves, so that when people are going to get food for their families, they can, oh, okay, I can get this kibble for my dog, or, you know, whatever, at the same time. And she's just been remarkable. She's grown to needing several trucks to transport things. She's got corporations matching per pound donations, and it's just been amazing. It's become truly my favorite charity. When I had my birthday party, I said to everyone coming, I said, I don't want any presents, but please bring a donation for the Pet Project, and we'll see it gets donated. And, you know, that's an easy way you can do some good yourself, is just to give people a little nudge and a little excuse to make a donation of that sort. They might want to, but they, you know, just didn't think of it. And if you say, okay, we're having this get-together and we'd love to have you bring something, you know, a little five-pound bag of food, not going to set them back much, but it can really, really, you know, mean another week or another month or whatever that person can have a very beloved pet stay with them.
You know, that's a great point, Sid. So many people of us want to give to charities and nonprofits, and we're a very giving society here in the U.S., but a lot of times people just don't know where to give. You know, you always see the commercials for the Red Cross and the United Way and the Children's Hospital and things that have, you know, huge marketing budgets, but there are so many small, I like to call mom-and-pop nonprofits, mm-hmm. pet pantries and rescues and things. There are so many people that own pets. I have no idea what the statistic is for the number of people versus the number of pets. But when we think about it, it is a problem that all of us will go through at least sometime in our lives, where we will be forced to either give or receive. And I think that that is something that is very important. We need to be able to know where to give. And if that time comes, you know how it is. A lot of people were slapped by this economy early on, and they had no idea it was going to come. They had a great job. They had a great income. They had a great retirement. And then all of a sudden, it was swept out from underneath them. And there they are, mom and dad, two or three kids, and a dog or two. And they are, you know, living in hotels or unfortunately in their cars and all sorts of things because they've ran out of resources. So I think it is a great way to give back to the community. So Sid and Michelle, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about round four, as well as having Sid talk a little bit about her book. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're a Schnauzer Shakespeare or a Hound Dog's Hemingway in the making, perk up your ears. Dog Works Radio is teaming up with animal chaplain Sid Corby, author of the award-winning book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, in presenting the Petlitzer Prize Contest, the pet-related writer's Pulitzer. Animal lovers can showcase their creative writing abilities for nifty awards and for the chance to have their works read live on Dog Works Radio. Categories range from poetry to short stories to persuasive essays and more. For more information, visit the blog page at www.goodgriefpetloss.com and click on the Petlitzer Prize link.
At Denver Dog Works, we offer a service dog training program for individuals nationwide. Each and every service dog that is trained through Denver Dog Works and Michelle Forto and her team has an individualized training plan. Michelle trains for autistic, mobility, medical alert, and psychiatric service work. In each case, the needs of the individual are met, and training of each dog is specialized for their handler's specific needs. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog and takes a tremendous amount of patience, handling, and work from everyone involved, including the family members of the service dog recipient. If you are interested in finding out more about our service dog training program, please visit our website at denverdogworks.com or give us a call at 303-578-9881.
Team Aneke and Robert Forto are training for the Iditarod and are looking for corporate and individual sponsors to help chase this dream. Running the race is the easy part. Proper year-round care can cost upwards of $30,000. From feeding, vet care, travel to races and more, we give the dogs the best. There are several sponsorship levels to choose from. Check out our website at teamaneke.com. We will see you on the trail. Mosh, you Huskies! Gee-haw!
You are listening to Dog Works Radio. We have the best and train the rest. Now back to the show.
And we are back. This is Robert Forto, host of the Dog Works Radio Show. I am up here in Willow, Alaska, and on the line we have our co-host, Michelle, in Denver, and our recurring guest, Sid Corby, calling in from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is the author of Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, and she is also the top judge, I guess we could call her, of the Petlitzer Prize. And just in our last segment, we read the winning entries for round three of the Petlitzer Prize, which was persuasive essays. Sid, tell us about round four. How do people start, and what is the topic?
I am excited about this one. We are going back to the short story format because it was very popular for people, but we're doing it with a little twist. The stories that you submit have to be between 400 and 700 words, and they must start with the sentence, "It was a dark and stormy night, and my dog, cat, horse, whatever pet, dot, dot, dot." You complete that sentence and go on from there. You can take it in any direction you want. It can be humorous. It can be scary. It can be suspenseful. It can be fantastical. Whatever your spirit moves you to do, but it just has to start with the same prompt. It was a dark and stormy night, and my pet, dot, dot, dot.
You know, I think this is going to be a great topic. I'm a huge horror fan. I'm a huge suspense fan. And when I read this on your email, the wheels got to churning. And too bad I can't submit my own because you know how it is.
You could do it with a pseudonym.
Yes.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Sid and I kind of have a secret agenda with this one for you.
Oh.
Go for it, sexy boys.
We are trying to get you, Robert, my dear husband, to write an example.
I see. Well, I could be like Stephen King and go under the name Richard Bachman.
Richard Bachman.
Right. So I look forward to this one, Sid and Michelle. So when is the deadline for this?
The deadline is May 31st, and the winners will be announced by June 15th. But just because you've got a couple of months, don't put it off. If you get a creative spark, submit it right away. Just get it into us. And, I'm just excited. I want to see what people come up with. It's a pretty fun topic, and I'm just excited.
I think it'll be a good one. What a way to bring, like we were talking about earlier, about bringing some kids into this. This is right towards the end of the year of school. Things are winding down at school, and what a better way to really kick off the summer than to possibly win a Pulitzer Prize. Hey, that's something you could put on your resume. People have no idea what kind of weight this type of award carries. What do the winners get, Sid?
They get a lovely, frameable certificate saying that they won this particular round of the Pulitzer Prize, and the first place winner also gets a beautiful medallion. It has a handsome star with a paw print over it, and on the back it says, First Place Pulitzer Prize. And then they also get to have their stories read live on your show. They get it posted on my blog and Facebook and so forth. So they get a lot of exposure from this.
They do. And, our previous show, hold on just a second, Michelle. Our previous show, Round 2, was one of our most popular shows on DogWorks Radio. I think over at the time, my last check was over 4,500 people have downloaded that show, whether on Blog Talk Radio, on iTunes, or other platforms. A lot of people have heard those stories. So don't be shy, guys. If you want to write, if you want to get your 15 minutes of fame and you want it here on our show, you can do it right here on blogtalkradio.com/dogworks. So it is something that a lot of people will hear, and I think that's a little motivation to do it well. Don't you think, Sid?
Absolutely. And you need to know this is one of the only free writing contests I know of. I've had to pay for the privilege of having my book read. Even if I don't win, I've paid up to $100 to get in. And I get no more than the same certificate that I send out on my own, my own bill here. I pay for all of that.
Right.
So, someday we may get so huge that we will have to charge a small amount just to cover shipping and handling and so forth. But for the time being, get in on it while it's free.
Sure. And it always takes time for things to really take off. And even with our radio show, I remember the first few shows, we were just barely out there. Hardly anybody was listening to us. And then all of a sudden, in the last couple of years, it has just skyrocketed to the number of people that listen to us live as well as download each week. And we do some pretty good work here on DogWorks Radio. We talk about a lot of different topics. I know Michelle and I have mentioned we talk about raw food. We've talked about service dogs and service dog rights. We've talked about Michael Vick and the controversy that brought, as well as other entertaining topics such as a lot of authors, including Sid Corby and a lot of folks that we've met through the years on this show, and we're so welcome to have that, and I want to thank everybody that does listen. But before we go any further, Sid, I know you're a writer, I know you're an editor, so let's give kind of a writing tip 101. You know, we talked earlier about blog writing, and this is Blog Talk Radio, so it's a blog-type show. A lot of people just sit down and write and then press send, and they don't do any editing, they don't do any formatting or anything, and I'm guilty of this all the time. Often I will post a blog article, and Michelle will get an email, and she'll say, you have to fix so-and-so. You spelled this wrong, you spelled that wrong, and I'll have to go back to my iPhone and edit it on the fly to make sure it reads right. So can you give us just a few tips about how people should edit their stuff before they press send, whatever it is, whether it's an email or a story or a thank you note or whatever?
Absolutely. Well, being a displaced proofreader because of the economy, where many of the newspapers and other publications I worked for a decade went belly up, I know that one of the things that people let slide is proper spelling and grammar. And it's well, on the one hand, it's good that there's the internet and everyone has access to it and everyone can be a writer, but it's also allowed for a lot of laziness. And I think over the long haul, you will build a better reputation as a writer if you do take the time to proofread it. Now, the caveat there is we really are not great at proofreading our own work. And that is because the human brain, as you're reading, if you wrote it, your brain fills in what you intended to have there, and you may not even see the error. And, of course, you can use spell check, and it is a valuable tool, but it will not catch things like if you meant the word and you just wrote an, if you wanted it's with an apostrophe versus it's without. It's not going to catch that for you. And so if you have the luxury of somebody who is fairly adept at that, send it to them first. Say, would you take a quick peek at this and make sure that it's okay to send. If it's something very important, say a cover letter and a resume or something like that, definitely have someone read over it to catch formatting and spelling and whatever errors. You know, the thing I would always catch in proofreading writing is ambiguity in the phrasing. People constantly do it, and they don't even realize it. One joke was there was an ad wanted a farmer to milk cows who doesn't smoke. And it sounds like the cows don't smoke, but it means the farmer doesn't smoke. But the way it's phrased, it's incorrect. You say, I don't know which one you mean. And so it's those kind of things that if you can pick them out, you know, sometimes it's just juggling parts of the sentence around to make sure you're being clear. There's so much laziness out there that people, you know, they communicate a lot and they say little.
Right, right. You know, those are great points. And, you know, I write a daily blog for myself, and of course a lot of people read that, and they don't always talk about dog training. I cover a lot of different topics on my blog, and I am a very quick writer. I usually just kind of knock them out in a few minutes, and then I will always have an error or two. But, you know, to me, my process is to get the thoughts out, and of course I do try to fix the mistakes, but I also have a style that I write in it. And a lot of people have said it's awful sarcastic and you know, kind of direct and to the point. And it really shows my personality about the topics I write about. And the reason I want to mention this, Sid, is there are a heck of a lot of bloggers out there that write about pets. I think the number one blogging topic is what they call the mommy bloggers. Those are the people that are writing about the daily activities of being a mom. And probably in a close second, third, or fourth are the pet bloggers, and they write about dogs and you know, the exploits of their pets. And if you're on Twitter, you will see thousands upon thousands of tweets about pets, and many people will even tweet as their pets, where the dog is doing the talking on the Twitter, and it says, I'm going on a walk today, and my human friend stumbled and fell over a rock. And it's kind of a cute, satirical way of talking through the dog, which I think is pretty cool. So I wanted to mention that, because there are a heck of a lot of people that want to write about their dogs and their exploits and things that happen. And, you know, the most important advice I can give, and I don't remember who gave it to me, is the only way you're going to be a good writer is keeping your butt in the chair and writing about it every single day, no matter what the topic is. And that's what I've been doing, and that commitment has really helped with my focus on writing. And I know you've told me many times, as kind of my mentor in terms of writing books and things, about just getting down and writing what you're thinking about. And I think that's an important part of it, don't you think?
Oh, of course, and having a personal voice. You know, having things spelled right and unambiguous doesn't mean you have to lose your personality. It's just the opposite. It makes it have more strength and power if you're being very clear. Like, for instance, you said putting your butt in the chair and writing about it. That sounds like you're writing about the chair or your butt.
That's ambiguous,
isn't
it?
This is how compulsive I am. I hear these things. They pop out at me.
That's exactly right. All right, Sid, we have about 10 minutes left, and we have to plug your movie. We've talked about that in previous shows, and I'm going to do my best. Michelle and I were just talking about this before we went on air, about getting my butt to Minneapolis to see this movie on May 25th. So tell us about Attack of the Moon Zombies. I'm looking so forward to it.
I think your butt will enjoy it. We actually got to see the finished movie and record the commentary for the DVD. And first of all, you need to understand, these are modern movies made to be just like the old vintage 1950s black and white drive-in style creature features of the 50s. Just as cheesy and charming and fun and humorous inadvertently and on purpose. And this one is the sixth movie of Christopher R. Mim, M-I-H-M, if you're looking him up. He's a Twin Cities-based filmmaker and writer, and he's done just wonderful work from his first movie, The Monster of Phantom Lake, to It Came from Another World, Cave Women on Mars, Terror from Beneath the Earth, Destination Outer Space, and now Attack of the Moon Zombies. He just gets better and better and better. And I think we've, you know, not just because I'm in this in a fairly major role, Administrator Ripley, not just because I'm involved so closely, but even if I were just watching this as somebody separate, just coming to it, but with a love of this genre, I would say this is possibly his best work. And that's saying a lot, because I loved all his early stuff, too. And it's getting more sophisticated in plot. It's got a lot of ensemble play among the actors. And it's actually quite touching, even, if you can believe this. It's very affecting. And I'm so thrilled to be a part of it. I've done a lot of weird things in my life and had minor successes and accomplishments in many areas, and this is one of my proudest things. My book and this movie are probably two of my very proudest things I've done, and I couldn't be more thrilled to be a part of it. I'm excited that it will be premiering at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights, Minnesota, on May 25th. And it's a red carpet affair. You can come dressed up to the nines, and there will be cake, and you can meet the monsters, and you can meet all the cast, and, you know, get things signed there. And they are actually taking advanced ticket sales, for which when you go to the website for that, and his website is www.saint, S-A-I-N-T, Euphoria, E-U-P-H, O-R-I-A.com, SaintEuphoria.com. You can pre-order your tickets if you live in Minnesota or plan to be here then. And you can get commemorative collector tickets for it, and you'll get all sorts of things. You know, you can get copies of the movie for free. You end up almost making money by doing it that way. And it's just so important to support local artists, you know, when everything is so high-tech and totally CGI'd and 3D and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes you just want to sit back and see something low-tech and marvelously homemade and cheesy and just enjoy a bit of that for a time.
You know, Sid, I got my first movie just the other day when I was in Denver. I got it in the mail here, and mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to watching it this evening. What is it called again? I can't see it from over across the way. The Monster from Shadow Lake. What is it called
Phantom
again?
Lake.
Phantom
Monster
Lake.
Phantom Lake. Oh,
so
it's great.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch that tonight. So I'll have to make up a box of popcorn and sit down with the lights off and the pup on the couch and watch that flick. So I'm looking forward to it. So we're not just a dog show here, guys. We do talk a lot about different topics, and that is our personality, even in at Halloween time, we do a Halloween show, and we're looking forward to that every year. And what, and again, a very popular show. So pay attention to us on Dog Works Radio. It's not just about dog training, but if you're a dog owner, I'm sure you will like some of the topics we talk about. Sid, we have about 5 minutes. Tell us about your website. Tell us where we can get in contact with you. Then Michelle is going to close the show.
I have a website that is www.goodgriefpetloss.com, and my book is available there. Any books that are ordered through my website, you can have personally inscribed however you would like, and I will autograph those. And $2 from every purchase goes to support a no-kill animal shelter. And otherwise, it's also available at Barnes & Noble and whatever border books are still open, and Amazon.com, and even libraries. So check all over if you are in need yourself of preparation or soothing after the loss of a pet, or if you have someone that you think could benefit from this, you know, a friend or family member, and you don't necessarily know what to say to comfort them, give them something that will give them some ongoing support. It's a very thoughtful gift.
You know, I know Michelle had given a tenant that worked right next to us at our dog training school. Their dog passed away, and we gave them a copy of your book. And I remember her saying, "What a great way to get through this time," and she greatly appreciated it. So it is a wonderful read, and it's a wonderful resource for that very upsetting and grieving time that we all go through when we do lose our pets. Michelle, close us out here.
I would just like to mention out there to all of our listeners that, no, we are not your typical dog show. Anybody out there that would like us to discuss a topic that we either have in the past or have not in the past spoken about, just send us an email to, is it live at dogworksradio.com?
Yes.
Okay, so live at dogworksradio.com, and we'd be happy to discuss your topic. If you have an author out there that has not gotten a lot of publicity and needs to get some free publicity, give us an email as well at live@dogworksradio.com. Otherwise, you can reach me and or Robert for any of your dog training needs in the nation at Dog Works Training Centers. DenverDogWorks.com is the website. The phone number is 303-578-9881.
There you go. What a plug. So for Sid Corpy and Michelle Forto, we will see you guys next time. And around the third week of June or so, it will be round four of the Petlitzer Prize right here on Dog Works Radio. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.